in my office hang two large posters. Both are in black and white, holy. One of them talks about commitment, the other courage, and both of them paint scenes from the civil rights movements of the 50s and 60s in the Deep South. They hang opposite each other. And in my previous ministry in Omaha, I very intentionally placed one where the one about courage faced across where I sat, so that every day I had to think about my own courage. Now I get to see both of them out of the peripheral vision, but they still call to me to do different things. The one of courage, or of three young black people being hosed against a store building in Alabama. The other, commitment, shows marchers still with 34 miles to go on their way from Selma, Alabama, to Montgomery, the state capital where they're protesting. Having walked some small part of that journey, only a very little bit, but in July, not March, I can tell you it is not a fun walk. I started once at one of the Baptist churches in Selma where everything started, and we walked from the middle of town, a very small town, Selma is, all the way across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Perhaps because I've seen so much footage of this event from the 1960s, in my mind, it's in black and white, even though I lived it in color. But I feel like that image, even of the bridge as I walked it, it's rusted color, a bridge that hasn't been taken care of in a city that hasn't been taken care of, seems so old and dilapidated. Much like how we think of our work still to happen in the Deep South. And so, for a number of years, five of them to be exact, I walked with teenagers, young adults, elders, all the way from the middle of Selma, Alabama, over this bridge. We'd wait for a bus to drive there and pick us up, and then later in the night, we would talk about what it must have been like to come to the edge of the bridge and kneel, only to be beaten by police. What it must be like to come to the edge of the bridge again and wonder if that would happen one more time, only to find that you could keep going, but this time for another 40-plus miles, a trek that I'm not sure I could make even if I was so committed to justice. These black and white images that I have in my office came from those trips. I volunteered, worked a little bit for the UU Service Committee, kind of a cousin to the American Friends Service Committee. And after I finished my 5 years with them, they gave me these posters as a reminder of our time in the Deep South. It was helpful for me to see in black and white stark footage of what it was like. Many ways, the images of the 1950s and 60s is black and white. We can think of what it was like that was wrong and we know right, losing the nuance that comes in shades of gray. But I am called to my own memories, to my memories of hearing the voices of all of the people of Selma, some of the police officers who were there who did the beating, some of the people who walked, some of the people who stood in their houses and shut their doors and just wanted the whole thing to blow over. I am reminded, as I wear this black robe and a mostly white stole, that nothing is ever black or white. That though we look for ends of the spectrum, this assumption that we'll end up on one side or the other, either politically or religiously, that we are found most often somewhere in between. Now, our faith, Unitarian Universalism, is well-suited to fill that space, right? We're not quite Christian, not quite theist, not quite pagan, not quite atheist, something in the middle. We know that space well. And so it's helpful for us to embody that space, that color, if we will, when we're looking at shades of gray. I did not know. It's funny, when we started worship, I asked Denise if there was anything she needed. She said, "What about a little sunshine?" I said, "Yeah, I wish." I didn't know it was going to rain today, and so I planned to tell you the story of Noah and the flood. Awesome timing. So, you all may know some of this. God's mad at the world, thinks he's done not a great job at the world because things have gone terribly awry, and so he floods the whole place. And at least in my imagination of this, after the 40 days of rain, day and night, the rain stops, the ark stops moving, and Noah has to send out a bird to see if it stopped raining. And I wonder, looking out on a day like today, plants couldn't be green. There probably wasn't much moss, many trees, much shrubbery, and so it probably was gray and rainy and not quite warm. I wonder if the story of the rainbow that comes from that story is a sign of color that calls to us, that gives us hope. I always thought the rainbow was a sign of, I'm not going to do this again to you, which of course doesn't make a lot of sense because there are floods all the time. But instead, maybe it's a sign of hope amidst the gray, a sign that we can live into the colors, whatever they are, even when things seem confusing. Similar to the Wizard of Oz, when everything goes from black and white to all of a sudden it's in color and life begins. That's what it's like for us. So often now, maybe you've seen it online, people are taking pictures of the 50s and 60s or beyond and colorizing them to give life to what it is we saw in times before. And so, perhaps it's time for us to look for the colors of justice in our lives. Writer David Rosen tells this story. He tells of his very first courthouse experience. It was in the spring of 1968. He was a member of faculty at Columbia University, and he witnessed this student uprising that had disrupted that school, as often happened in the 60s. Earlier that year, he had been called to jury duty. Like many faculty members who received that call, he postponed a service till the end of the semester. So he gets to a Manhattan court in early June, and he finds that the jury panels are filled with members of the Columbia faculty. The corridors, on the other hand, seem to be filled with our students, he writes, appearing to face charges on various counts of trespassing and resisting arrest. He writes, the experience was equally memorable for another reason, the racial imbalance of the entire occasion. It seems as though, in his memory, all of the accused seemed to be black, which brings him to the relevance of his experience of justice and the color of justice. His very first courthouse experience took place in Manhattan, and there was an 1893 painting by Edward Emerson Simmons. In it, Justice is pictured as a beautiful woman, blonde, but without the expected blindfold. Kneeling before her are two beautiful children, a boy and a girl, each also blonde. Each presents an object on a pillow to Justice, the boy a sword, the girl a lily. However, the icons of this picture may symbolize justice tempered by mercy. Its most powerful impression for David Rosen was this, that it was the Caucasian blondness that gave justice to the world, not anything else. It took him and some others to think of what justice could look like. And so Ellsworth Kelly went into Boston and made a painting for a courthouse there, the Moakley Courthouse, of different colors. In the art and judicial worlds, there have been all sorts of reviews and consternation about the lack of clarity with Ellsworth Kelly's piece, that it's not quite the same justice image we have, because it's an abstract piece. It's instead of one person, something you see, it's just colors. It's just a rainbow of sorts. There are stark reds. I imagine those reds perhaps to be the red of love. The love of who we are, perhaps. A justice that allows us to be our truest self without fear of political repercussion or threats of harm from others around us. Looking at the picture of that art in the courthouse and the stark reds, I imagine the red of justice can represent the love of marrying the person we love, if so desired. There are deep greens, forest greens, that maybe call to the environment for us, recognizing the distance between taking care of the earth that we live on. I wonder what it would take for us to move beyond this mental understanding of our reliance on nature to an emotional, heartfelt connection that calls us to devotion and action. If we move beyond seeing environmentalism in a black and white world where, yes, we would love to be green, but it's hard to do so when we're so busy, to somewhere in between, somewhere where we can do as much as possible, recognizing our limitations, perhaps we make more progress. Of course, that color of green calls another component of justice to mind, economic justice. One of my favorite writers, a songwriter actually, Aaron Nyquist, has this phrase that calls me every single time to recognize the injustice economically that exists. He calls us to recognize the distance between the haves and the never wills. Not just the haves and the have-nots, but those who are in such poverty, who are in such far away positions that they will not reach a middle point. They will not climb out of their lower class standing to an upper lower class or even to a lower middle class. People we really have to go to be with and stand with and help. Beyond the red of love, the green of maybe the environment or of money, there is the blue of peace. The peace within ourselves, the peace between people on a daily basis, how we are with one another. The peace in the home, so that parents and partners express no violence and people can feel safe to grow and to live with the love they deserve. The peace between peoples and religions, which comes with building relationships. It may come as no surprise to us that one study would prove that there's fewer acts of violence, particularly gun violence, in neighborhoods where people know one another. If you know your neighbor, you're less likely to shoot them. That seems obvious to me, but it's good to have some science to back it up. And so when I saw this deep blue, or maybe indigo, maybe even that rich, holy color of violet, I felt peaceful. All of these colors can symbolize to us something that goes beyond just clear-cut right and wrong, recognizing that we stand on different aspects of these justice questions. We stand wherever we are based out of our own experience, but we must stand. This brings me to the one color in the rainbow that I've seemingly jumped right over. Most of you brought it in with you this morning as I am almost literally preaching to the choir. It's the yellow. The yellow, and for us, perhaps, as Unitarian Universalists, it's easy for me to think of it as the color of the love people. You see, many years ago, there was this song written, Standing on the Side of Love, and then a campaign launched within our faith and a little bit beyond our faith of a justice movement, something where we could reach out, and we created these god-awfully colored shirts and bumper stickers and signs. But they stand out. And so you can see in pictures now, and it's amazing. In North Carolina, when they had Moral Mondays, you'd see pictures of yellow people places. CBS News this week had a story about same-sex marriage going to the Supreme Court, and its picture online was of Linda Olsen Peebles, one of our ministers close by, in her yellow Standing on the Side of Love collar shirt. When I travel in airports, I often will wear my Standing on the Side of Love shirts, and I've had people in the airport shout, "Go you, you!" A little weird at first. I wasn't thinking it would happen, even though I sort of wanted it to. But mostly this came about and came to life in the state of Arizona. And I take us to Arizona in many ways to parallel and to bookend with Selma. I mentioned when I talked to you about Jim Reeb, and if you don't know the history of Unitarians in Selma, there's so much richness there. It wasn't just Jim who went, but a lot of people. Jim Hobart, who's another big minister in our faith, went there because our faith calls on us to show up and to be there when people want our presence in relationships. One year, Unitarian Universalists were supposed to meet in Arizona, and due to a lot of immigration questions, we really didn't know if we should go or not. There was a lot of fighting back and forth between people. Do we boycott? Do we go anyway? A lot of talking about color. Do we lose the green? Do we go into the red? Do we stay in the black? Finally, there was a compromise struck that we went and we helped, but we went there to learn and to do justice work. And in many ways, we would go there to stand on the side of love, to bring light and hope to the world. And so that's what we did. Every day during this conference, you would see people in yellow shirts. Is there an image up there of people in yellow shirts? You'd see that everywhere. People started to know us as the love people, the yellow shirt people, which isn't a bad way to be known. It's good to be known for your values. And so, you know, even I became known as one of those yellow shirt people. Moving beyond my black and white robe, I pull out the yellow shirt even sometimes, just to be known as I'm out here shining light and hope to the world. So when we went to Arizona, we went not just to show up and pat ourselves on the back, but we went to do and to learn. And so we went and we created book bags for children who needed supplies. And we helped people do paperwork when it came to immigration, and we learned and we rallied. We spoke with legislators, we advocated for whatever our political positions were, knowing that some of us disagreed about the right way for immigration change, but that some sort of change was necessary for there to be good, relational, respectful immigration. That's what Unitarian Universalism is about, finding our way to show up. Though we may disagree on how or what we believe, we come together, join together with our different views. Now, you're here at the 9 o'clock service. Some of you may stay for the 10:45, but I've decided to make our own little Arizona. Our 10:45 service, we're breaking into different groups where people will learn how to advocate and make bags for people and do projects so that we end up as a brew community standing on the side of love, so that we end up serving others as part of our service in this community. This Martin Luther King Day, and every Martin Luther King Day, for me, is a reminder not that it's a day off, but a day on. It's a day of service, a reminder that there is still more work to be done. The truth, as Niebuhr said, is that the work will never be done. Not in our lifetime. And so we are saved by hope. We're saved by faith and love and by our relationships. In fact, we're saved by standing on the side of love with those we care for. And so I want you to think about however it is you might go out into the world, whatever it is you feel like you can change and help people do to bring sunshine and light to those around you. Amen. And blessed be.